Barry Jenkins spent many years shoveling popcorn and introducing films at the Telluride Film Festival. But his own film, Moonlight, premiered there earlier this year. It's his first feature film in 8 years, a long interlude for most film directors, but the wait has clearly been worth it. The New York Times, The New Yorker, and just about every other major publication has heralded the film as the best this year. It follows the life of Chiron in three acts with three different actors, from boyhood to adolescence to adulthood. He deals with a drug-addicted mother, a struggling neighborhood in Miami, and his own sexuality. The story is based off of a semi-autobiographical play by Terrell Alvin McCraney, who has won a MacArthur Genius Grant. Even though they didn't know each other, Terrell and Barry actually grew up in the same neighborhood. Lois Reitzes spoke with Barry and actor Trevante Rhodes, who plays Chiron in the third act of Moonlight.
You had a remarkably similar experience to Terrell growing up. It almost seems like you were destined to find this story to adapt for the screen. How do your personal experiences manifest on the screen through a story that isn't originally your own?
Yeah, you know, Terrell and I grew up, blocks one another, and both our moms went through the same ordeal with drug addiction. And it's a very small neighborhood, a lot of stories, but a small neighborhood. So our lives were just very, very similar. And so just reading the character, there were so many aspects of, you know, growing up with a single mom, you know, who's going through, you know, just this sort of, this ravaging sort of like out of body ordeal that I could directly relate to. And also the idea of being a kid who doesn't feel necessarily comfortable in his own skin and living in a world where any sign of discomfort is usually met with aggression, you know, to keep from that aggression meeting you. So I could relate to a lot of the way the character sort of like retreats inward over the course of the story. And, you know, and working with Terrell, I just tried to find places where I could really organically meld my voice with his voice and have us share the character.
And you understand then why he got that MacArthur.
Yeah, exactly. Well, because he is a genius. Yeah.
Great institutions and great people, mm-hmm. like Ta-Nehisi Coates, no less, mm-hmm. have complimented the film on its portrayal of masculinity. What were some of the nuances you tried to capture?
The biggest thing for me was, you know, we have this coming-of-age story, but we tell it in three chapters, you know? And so what I like to think of it is there's all this time passing between each story. You know, the character's 10, then he's a teenager, then he's a young adult. And I wanted to make this commentary on how much the world can change a person. And so each time we revisit the character at a new stage, he's literally become a different person. So I felt like in casting these different people to play the same character, we could really, you know, use these men as a barometer for just how greatly the world can affect us, both for good and for ill. And so there are certain ways that I think the men in this film, you know, exchange greetings. There's the way they sort of talk to one another. You know, I've never seen a black man cook for another black man in a film. And so it was important to have these gestures to show the many different permutations of masculinity within the black community.
Well, this certainly brings up another question I'd like to ask you later, but Trevante, you play Chiron as a grown man.
Yes, ma'am.
And I would love to quote this line from a review. Rhodes doesn't need a whole lot of time to tear your heart in half, and Moonlight's finest scene rests on his sculpted shoulders. That's some pretty impressive praise.
Indeed.
All right, sculpted shoulders. That's our nickname for you from now on. You are the third chapter of Chiron's life. Did you identify with him?
Absolutely. I think one of the great things about the script and one of the great things about the movie entirely is that everyone can identify with him in the sense that we all at some point find that we are insecure about something or we are struggling with just our identity as a whole, trying to find out who we are and trying to find love. Mm-hmm. So absolutely.
What were some of the difficulties of the portrayal?
I think really just trying to find that balance of that relationship with his mother, because mm-hmm. I have a very, very wonderful relationship with my mother. And so trying to find that person and find that sensation was kind of difficult for me. But, you know, having the people that I had with me to kind of get through that was everything I needed.
Like a great director.
Barry Jenkins. Yes, ma'am.
Now, Trevante, your acting career, I read, started out with being discovered while you were on a run.
Mm-hmm.
My husband has been running the same route in our neighborhood for 35 years. No one has ever recruited him for a movie. What happened on your jog?
I was jogging with my shirt off,
sculpted shoulders,
and someone saw me and felt as if I looked like the person that she was casting in her head, and she gave me an opportunity. I didn't get that film, but it sparked something in me to kind of want to pursue it a little bit more.
So then did you begin to study acting?
I began to look into it more, not necessarily study it, but I was in my final year of college, and so when I graduated, I just packed up everything and moved to L.A. And
wow.
Then I studied it. Yes, ma'am.
Well, one of the remarkable things about this film is that you shot it in the neighborhood where the story originates. Mm-hmm. The only Hollywood features that seem to do that are documentaries. Mm-hmm. Why was that especially important for this film?
You know, because Terrell and I are both from the city, from the neighborhood, it was a part of the DNA of the project, and it was embedded in the DNA of the character. You know, our budget could have gone a lot farther in places like, you know, Baton Rouge or even Atlanta, because of the tax incentives and things like that. And there are neighborhoods like Liberty City, you know, in those cities, but you know, it just felt like this had to be done at the home, because so much of my personality, Terrell's personality, is just rooted in the place. And I think when you watch the film, it bears that out.
So striving for the authentic or remaining authentic actually cost you.
Yeah, it did. But, you know, there's different kinds of costs. You know, I think what we gained, you know, spiritually and sort of, the evocative imagery and feeling of the film definitely offset, you know, whatever we lost in the bank, you know, for not taking the incentives and going elsewhere.
How did the neighborhood people react to the film crew being there?
Mm. Well, at first, they were like, who are you?
I grew up here.
I did. And they were like, are you sure? Because, you know, it had been a while. And most of the things that film in Miami right now, they are sort of documentaries. But they're these documentaries like the show The First 48, you know, which doesn't show the nuances of the neighborhood in a way that I think would be appropriate. So when we showed up, they were like, are you another one of these people? And I was like, no, we're from the neighborhood. You know, we're telling the story. This happened to us and it happened here. And over the course of time, you saw the neighborhood take ownership of the project in a few different ways. One, you know, I wanted the actual voice of the neighborhood to be in the film. So the first voice you hear in Moonlight is not an actor. You know, it's a guy who came into a community center for an audition. And I just loved his personality and his vibe. And so he's the first thing you see and hear in this movie. But then also, too, you know, some of the neighborhoods we were shooting in, illicit things happen at night. And so there aren't that many streetlights, you know, that the streetlights get shot out. But here we are with all these big lights. And so the parents in the neighborhood were like, you know, we kind of love that you guys are here because, you know, the kids can watch and they see that you're from the neighborhood. And you have all these lights, you know, so they can stay out a bit later. And so it just became organically, the movie kind of fused with the neighborhood in this really lovely way.
Well, we can only hope that Hollywood will get better at portraying people who are not white, straight, fill in the blank. Mm-hmm. For this film, neither of you are gay. So how did you sensitively approach Chiron?
Yeah, you know, for me, it was about Terrell McCraney, who, you know, is openly gay and sexuality is often, not always, but often, you know, a huge part of his material. You know, it's, again, I like to say embedded in the DNA of the piece. When it first came to me, I wasn't sure if I was the right person to take this on, because as a director, I want to be able to put things in my voice. And this aspect of his sexuality is not, you know, a first-person experience in my voice. And we know people, artists working purely from empathy, who try to make movies about others, and, you know, that can only get you so far. But I felt like, as an active ally, if I could preserve Terrell's voice and be respectful of it, that I could wed that with this sort of active empathy and get to a place where I could take authorship over the piece. And so Terrell and I talked about it over the course of about 6 months. And once I got to a place of comfort with it, that I felt like, okay, that I can actually, like, I can do right by Terrell, preserve his words, preserve his intent, and get take ownership of it, I never thought about it again after that point. And at that point, I was just making a movie about characters with this one aspect of their identity amongst many others, because it's a very intersectional film to me.
Well, one would hope that we could reach a point where we have enough shared human understanding mm-hmm. that mm-hmm. we can tell stories mm-hmm. or even approach or approximate empathy without being
mm-hmm. absolutely
of that background. Mm-hmm. Trevante, what was it like portraying a gay man? Had you ever played a gay character before?
No, ma'am, I have not, but I don't know. I find myself, I guess, ignorant to the fact that there is a difference, you know? I feel like, I said often, but I feel like if I was, I mean, I would be the same exact way if I was born loving men. I just so happened to be born loving women. So I felt that, I mean, it was just really about me trusting the material and trusting in Barry and coming to that understanding.
I like something I read that you said, Barry, about universality in the specifics.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, the first place this film played was the Telluride Film Festival, which could not be further removed.
Not exactly, a whole lot
of black people, exactly, and a whole lot of white people, and from a different class, a whole different milieu than the people in this film. And yet, I held grown adults in my arms as they sobbed after screenings of this film in Telluride, because people, I think because of the specificity, you know, this is a very particular person from a very particular block in a very particular city. I think anyone who's a very particular person from any particular block, from any particular city, can identify with what that feels like to have this out-of-body experience, you know, to not feel whole in your own body. And it just gets into people in this way. And I do think that when you drill down to the essence of things, like in this very specific way, it opens up this whole well, you know? Mm-hmm. It's like if you can see that person, then you can see me. It's kind of what I like to think is the experience that people are having.
Well, earlier when you mentioned, have you ever seen a black man cooking for another black man?
Mm-hmm.
That brings me to this. In one interview, you said that with your work, you want to create productive, not positive mm-hmm. images mm-hmm. of black people. Why that distinction?
I feel like sometimes when the mission is to create something that's positive, you tend to get away from some aspect that's authentic, because often there are very ugly, dark things in authenticity. And I feel like if it's dark enough and if it's authentic enough, you might not necessarily get to the end of the story and be at a place or arrive at a place that is positive. But I think so long as you're taking steps to get away from the darkness, those things can be productive. And I feel like that's much more like real life, you know? I don't know too many truly happy endings, you know? But I know people who are living thoughtful, productive lives, you know, and there's a happiness in that, you know. So I don't think productive imagery isn't positive, but I do think the opposite can often be true, where this push towards overt positivity sort of gets away from dealing with some of the truth and like the authenticity of actual lived experiences.
Not everyone is Dr. King.
Not everyone is Dr. King, but I would even opine that, you know, you watch Selma, and that's a movie that's more productive than positive, you know, because, you know, I even went into some darker aspects of the movement and of Dr. King's life, so which I think is very productive, because some kid watching Selma is going to realize, oh, what? Dr. King smoked cigarettes too? Maybe I'm not that horrible a person, you know? You know, and Dr. King ultimately, I think, quit cigarettes, and so maybe you can overcome those things, but... But I think we need to have these well-rounded depictions of our heroes, you know, which are often productive and not positive.
It really has been a pleasure talking with you both. Trevante Rhodes, thank you so much. Here's to your continued success. Barry Jenkins, you are not too proud to pop popcorn and tell people to turn off their cell phones.
True.
You've come a long way, and I say bravo.
Oh, thank you.